Yes, today I am once again rejoined by world-renowned winemaker, president and director of winemaking and former NBA All-Star Chinese icon Yao Ming's company, Yao Family Wines, Tom Hines. Tom, welcome back. What's going on?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to spend some time talking with you.
I appreciate that. There's a lot going on right now. Like I said, thanks for joining me. So how's everything been with you?
Well, I've personally been quite fine, and everyone in my
right.
family is safe, and everyone at the winery is safe and
right.
Sound from our management team right down to our tasting room
right.
team. However, as you know, there's been some challenges to tasting rooms. So we have a visitor center, hospitality
right.
center, event, and tasting room right in the heart of St. Helena in the middle of Napa Valley. And on March the 12th, Governor Gavin Newsom closed all the tasting rooms statewide. So they said, we weren't allowed to see customers. And well, quite frankly, there's not so many customers, coming to Wine Country now because they're all sheltered in their own homes in around the country. So we had to go virtual. And we had some success with that. I've been hosting a weekly wine tasting on Thursdays, 5 o'clock Pacific time. And we pick a different wine, and we send out notices to our wine club members and to our mailing list members. And we're allowed to have curbside pickup, and we're allowed to have home delivery. And then if you want to hear about the wines, I do a 1 hour, about a 40-minute talk every Thursday, 5 Pacific, and then Angela and Shia in the tasting room, they go through and answer questions, and we have a nice conversation. So it's kind of a little happy hour tasting we've been doing. And we've had some success with that. We can't replace the revenue that our visitor center brings us, overnight. But we're in the same boat as all the other wineries. They basically, the Sacramento, the governor, views a tasting room, unless it has a restaurant in it, and it's very few tasting rooms that have a full service restaurant permit, they basically view us in the same category as a bar or a pub, a brew pub.
Right.
So they consider that we have not opened those up yet in California. We just started some outdoor patios for restaurants, and it looks like mid-month we maybe get our hair salons back, but that there's
right.
some discussion around. There's still so much that's not known about
yeah.
how we will function at the end of this sheltering.
Right. Yeah, I know personally I'm going kind of crazy not being able to go to like different states and cover games and events. I know you're always traveling. My friend, you were in different countries. So.
Yeah, so I had to change all that. I had a trip to Germany planned, and I had a trip to
right.
Hong Kong planned. Since the shelter-in-place order, I've had to alter those two courses, and it looks like I'll be in Hong Kong the end of October after harvest for some events.
Okay.
But the wine fair in Dusseldorf every year is called Provine.
Okay.
It's just been not even rescheduled for next year yet at this point. They're still looking at it. And there's a couple of these global wine fairs that we attend. One's called Vinexpo, and it takes place 1 year in Bordeaux and 1 year in Hong Kong, and the wine world comes to those events. So that's a great place to see clients from around the globe. And then there's Provine, which is in Germany every year, and that way we can make two trips and see everybody. and
right.
well, those didn't happen this year. So there's the effect of our commerce, our commercial aspects this year have been, they've been challenged by this, these limitations in being able to see customers.
Yeah, those tournaments are universal. They just push back this upcoming basketball Hall of Fame class to next year because of the coronavirus, because it's not going to be stable enough for
right.
a lot of people every year that goes there, and I'm one of them. I wait till next year. I understand why, but still disappointed, but for the best.
Yeah, I think if we keep people healthy and
right.
find a way to come at this, medical professionals. But yeah, like you said, we're all getting a little stir crazy tied up inside our homes. And
right.
Is are federally regulated, right? They're part of the TTB, the Tax and Trade Bureau in Washington, and
right.
we are deemed essential businesses because we are part of the agricultural chain. And
right.
what that means is that our grapes are grown in vineyards, which are farms. You know, we call them vineyards, but it's nothing different than a farm. And then we're processed in the winery, and that's where we convert the grape juice to alcohol. Wine, and then we, the wine industry, the federal wine industry, is sold on grocery store shelves. So farm to shelf is considered an essential business, whether it's a chicken processing plant or a grape processing plant or an almond processing plant. So we are, in fact, part of the agricultural supply chain to grocery store shelves. That being said, we can still sell our wines. We don't sell an awful lot of wine in grocery stores because we're small, we're boutique, and we're a luxury wine brand
right.
here in Napa Valley. But we can still blend. We're going to bottle. We got a bottle of vintage here on June 16th, so we can still bottle. We can still, you know, look after and care for our wines. If harvest were to come, we can process our wines. So we're allowed to work in the winery. Physical winery. We just can't do the front of the house stuff, which is the hospitality and the tasting with customers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. November 2011, Y'all Family Wines was created, and since then the company has not looked back. How has your experience been working with Y'all, Ming, and Family Wines?
Well, Y'all is just a great person. He's a wonderful boss. He's a fantastic person to taste with. He has a passion for wine, and he has an amazing palate. He knows
right.
what he likes, and he's drank a lot of nice wines in his life. And I couldn't think of, you never know when you start working together, but I couldn't think of a better project to have gotten involved in or a more wonderful person to work with than Yao.
Yeah, you never know unless you try. I mean, some of the best things come from trying things new. It's a good thing y'all got together. It worked out perfectly.
Yeah, it worked out, and Yao is a team player. He's the founder, he's the proprietor, but he respects our team, and I think he's genuinely happy with the wine. So it's been a great project.
He said you guys are going virtual. Describing some of your wine releases. Can you give us some examples now?
What we do is we go on Facebook Live, and I sit with a glass of wine, and I talk about the wine. So I take a different wine this week. However, this week with all of the social unrest, we have
right.
decided to postpone our tasting.
Right.
And let me tell you why. We do it at 5 p.m. here in California, where that means it's 8 o'clock on the East Coast and 7 o'clock in Chicago and 6 o'clock in the mountains, and,
right.
and that way we catch a good swath of our customers. But given the social unrest of
right.
this week, we think it's in our best interest to not have a
right.
a fun happy hour because
yeah.
it's just not appropriate.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad stuff going on, and we will resume it. But what we do is we pull out a wine, and this week it was supposed to be Sauvignon Blanc, and I talk about the vineyards. And I talk about how I ferment that wine, and I talk about how we blend it,
right.
and then we taste it, and we talk about the flavors and the layers and the textures and the complexity. And then, Facebook Live has a chat feature, so people can just say, hey, Tom, tell me about what would you drink or eat with this, right?
Right.
And I'll say, oh, well, different types of seafood, shrimp, pasta, cream sauce, chicken, that kind of stuff. And then, someone else may ask another question type of thing. So it goes on for, about 40 minutes, and each week we pick a different wine, and customers can go to our website and buy those wines, and we appreciate that. Or they could just grab any wine they have at the house, and I've told people this, and, hang out and ask questions and talk about wine. So it's worked out kind of fun.
Taste is one of the biggest factors in why people buy wine. Can you tell me you speak on the importance of a distinctive and unique bottle wrap design on overall effect of a wine also, Like someone can look at that bottle and say, yes, that's Yao Ming's wine. Accessory part.
Well, we use a very classy bottle that you would find in a appropriate priced Cabernet from Napa Valley or
right.
a French Bordeaux. So we use what's called a claret bottle. And
okay.
it's, you know, taller and thinner as opposed to shorter and squatter. That would be a Burgundy bottle. So we use a very classic package. But, you know, Yao's name is right on the front, too, and it says
right.
Napa Valley on it. So when you see Yao Ming Napa Valley, you know that's a California wine made in Northern California in the heart of Napa Valley. And it tastes like a Napa Valley wine. We're not trying to make a French style. We're trying to respect Napa, respect
right.
our growing site, respect our vineyards, and then respect that balance that Yao drives in the wine with the textures and the tannins, the acidity, the oak, and the fruit.
Right.
Yeah.
You spoke a little bit earlier on the wine tasting rooms being closed. Another factor that's going to affect that when they're open is travel, because a lot of people are not going to travel because of the coronavirus, and the travel is going to pick up gradually. Do you think of some ways that the industry might can implement to help get consumers like back into the flow of safely going back to tasting rooms all over the country, including yours?
Yeah, that's a great question, John, because we don't know what that travel is going to look like. If the governor
right.
said, all clear, open tomorrow, we can open, and then we don't know whether people are going to be jumping on planes.
Right.
We don't suspect they do. It's going
to
take time for you know, people from
yeah.
Florida to jump on a plane to come taste wine or go vacation in Northern California, city or San Francisco. But I think
right.
that, you know, we live in a state where we have about 9 million people within driving distance of Napa Valley on a given weekend. So we think it's going to be more local people that are just tired of sitting in their house saying, let's jump in our car and go taste some wines.
Right.
And so that we think will be the first. And it's not just us, too. The restaurants in this area rely on that visitor. And
right.
the spas and all of the shops in Main Street, St. Helena, and all the boutiques in our area, they all rely on that same tourist dollar. You know, usually we come back from the holidays in January, February, March are pretty slow.
Right.
And then April, May, Easter time, things that, you know, warm up a little bit and pick up a little bit. And then we had a whole summer music series scheduled starting the 1st of May. Through the end of October. We do every other Friday a different act, a different group.
Right.
And they come and they play from, you know, 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And we have, you know, a fun Friday evening every other week here in the summer, all the way through harvest. And well, we've had to shut that down too. And whether we'll get any of that back September, October, I don't know. It's hard to say. But I think we're all looking at Napa, Sonoma, the wine regions, Paso Robles to a certain degree, Santa Maria, Santa Barbara down south, as it's going to be a slow return. It's not going to be a normal June, because June's usually a fantastic month for us. There's brides running all around the vineyards
right.
and wine country, all the weddings that got shut down and all the caterers. Man,
yeah.
I just can't even put a number on that. Right now it would be the peak of, you know, people coming for their summer breaks, kids will be getting out of school, all
right.
that stuff is all been disrupted.
Yeah, as you mentioned, restaurants will be slow to recover to their pre-coronavirus status. What's
yeah.
the thoughts on that affecting wine sales? And how do you feel about, like, restaurants opening, like, wine to go when they open back up?
Well, we're all for restaurants offering wine to go when they open back up. One of the things we have seen with restaurants is many of our local restaurants have offered to-go menus, and, you know,
right.
I've had my fair share of those and to support them, and they have been selling wine to go. So the other day I went to pick up some pasta at an Italian restaurant locally, and
right.
you come up in the front and there's somebody takes your card and gives you your stuff. And then the table next to it, there's maybe 8 or 10 different wines. And it said any bottle, $25. Right. So
right.
I bought a bottle because the owners are friends of mine. I want to support them. And I thought it was a fantastic bottle of wine for $25. So I think the new normal will be that restaurants will sell wine to go or they'll sell it to be consumed on site. But one of the things that's hurting most wineries also is the fact that the restaurants are shut. So not only is our tasting room shut down, but we do sell our wine in restaurants in California and around the country, New York, Florida, you know, all over the place. Illinois has our wines. And those restaurants aren't open, those steakhouses. You know, he's eating in steakhouses because they're closed. Morton's and Ruth Chris and, you know, the guys at Mastro's and all these fantastic dining establishments where we sell a lot of Napa Valley Cabernet.
Right.
They're just not doing that. So we want them to all get back to selling wine either on the premises or off the premises to go and they all want to get back into business, too, I assume.
Yeah. One good thing about the situation, if anything, is more people are drinking because they're locked in the house. So that's like a good side to a bad situation.
Yeah, we've been offering, you know, on a three-bottle purchase complimentary shipping so that people who are home can call us and not, you know, have to pay an extra price for getting the wine to them, and they can – you know, call and reorder anytime. And there are people drinking more wine at home with their family and their friends. And that is a good, that's a little silver lining in this whole thing.
You have a lot of consumers asking guys for comparisons on the best topic to pair with your wine when they get them from you. Cause I remember last year, you were saying that's a big factor to compensate the wine with the chocolate to have a good pairing.
Yeah, you know, chocolate and wine really go very well together. In fact, when you come to our tasting room, we offer a chocolate pairing tasting with our wines, and we've got a local chocolatier in Napa who takes our wine and puts a little bit of wine in the truffle filling in the chocolate so that it has that Cabernet aroma to it. It's just really neat the way the tannins in the wine and the tannins in the chocolate, because tannin is in chocolate as well. And, you know, it too is a farmed agricultural product. But I don't know, just something about the human palate likes the flavor of chocolate and wine. And, you know, I have to look no further than when I was a little kid growing up in Ohio. I used to go to the movie on Saturday and I'd order Raisinets, right? And Raisinets are they're grapes and they're chocolate.
Right.
They have a long history of living side by side on the human palate, and people do enjoy it.
When it comes to vintage, how do you know you have a particularly good one?
It varies by the vintage because, you know, I'll give you an example. 15 we thought was fantastic. You know, we, middle of harvest, we're like, nothing went wrong. The spring was perfect. The summer went great. The fall is ideal. And the fruit tastes wonderful. And in barrel, it tasted really, really wonderful. And then 16 came along and we're like, I don't know if 16 is going to be as good as 15. Well, sure enough, a year in barrel, everybody's writing about 16s and saying, oh, my gosh, the 16s in barrel have really changed. So I think perceptively we look at the weather. We look at the wines as they come, or grapes as they come off. We look at the wines as they come off the press. And we start to say to ourselves, we think this is, and we start to place it somewhere. This is going to be like 13, right? Or this is going to be like whatever. And then as it ages, we sometimes change our opinion, mostly not. We know a good vintage, you know, as the wines are coming off the presses in November. And then, you know, we wait for the critics to register an opinion because they will have a lot to say about the vintage.
Right.
They're a third, you know, they're like an independent third party. It's one thing when, you know, you're raising your children and you think they're all cute, right? Because they're your children. But then they go off to school and someone's picking on them or something, you know what I mean? So then you get that third-party input, and that's when we start to kind of place the vintage. And we're usually all in agreement. We've been very lucky. I mean, California is one of those. We have sunshine. It's, you know, 90 degrees and sunny today, and tonight it's going to be 52 degrees, so it's going to drop, you know, in half practically. The temperature, and that cool fog will come in from the ocean. And we are very blessed and very unique. We're not a continental climate like Western Europe where, you know, anything can happen. You can get hail in the spring. You can get rain in the fall. You can get heat spikes in the summer. You get all sorts of things. right. that'll affect the vintage. And so when you look at European vintages, you go, oh, okay, what happened in 2013 or what happened in 2016? Oh, that's, okay. we got to avoid those. Let's only buy the 17s or something, right? And they have little charts. But in California, 9 years out of 10 are a textbook. And then we get that year once in a while, like 2011, where it was just cool. It didn't get warm that year the way it usually does. And so we were picking. I remember 2011 distinctively because we picked the last vineyard the middle of November, like the 14th. And, you know, we still had wine and fermenter in Thanksgiving time. So we had to come in Thanksgiving weekend and do our winemaking work. That is usually it's pretty unusual. We're usually done and pressed out, and everybody gets their first three-day weekend off since September in Thanksgiving, and that didn't happen in 11. So those are the things that distinguish it. However, it was more French-like vintage than 11. Everyone said it was cool, and the wines are going to be hard and green, and well, they weren't if you waited till November to pick them. But then they took time to come around in bottle. So people originally came out and said, oh, 11 is going to be a terrible vintage. And then 7 years later or so, people were saying, hey, these 11s are kind of tasting pretty neat. This was a cool, cold vintage, but it's kind of European. And so,
right.
Yeah. So, again, the point is we're very lucky. There's a lot of consistency in our Napa Valley vintages.
Okay. Consumer demands have obviously changed during these times. How crucial is it to have the ability to adapt to a situation like this in a winemaking company? Because some wine companies won't make it through this because of maybe bad management or anything. Obviously, you guys are ahead of the curve, and you know how to handle this.
Well, our team is, you know, we have a veteran team.
And, right.
And you can never plan for something like this, but you can react in a professional way. And so the first thing we did when they closed the tasting room is we went virtual. Well, eventually a lot of wineries went virtual, but the guys who got out there first and started doing, you know, virtual with shipments and online sales were able to sell some wine. And we, you know, I was quite impressed with the amount of wine we actually sold to people at home. Now, some wineries, you know, smaller wineries that are family, mom and pop type of wineries, they may not have been able to do that. So that will have an effect on their ability to survive. And then there's a lot of what we call kind of, quote, comfort wineries out there. And I'll use the example of Kendall Jackson. Kendall Jackson saw their grocery sales, their retail sales go up, you know, 60% because they're a large, established, you know, well-distributed wine that's available to many people. And people were looking for that comfort of things they know. Right. They would go in and buy extra bottles maybe at their trip to the store because they wanted that with, you know, home with them to drink kind of thing.
Right.
So companies like Kendall Jackson Group, they'll survive because they're very nimble and they're very well distributed and they have a very large customer following. So it's going to be a bit of a mixed bag here over the coming 2 years. I think it's going to be interesting.
Winemaking requires being patient, obviously. What advice would you give anyone thinking of getting into winemaking or studying wine about the importance of being patient?
Well, that's the key in a nutshell. And I have another saying that says winemaking is all about attention to detail.
Right.
And it's all details. everything's a detail, no matter what. I think you want to first have a passion for wine and be drawn to the winemaking process. And that happened to me at a very young age. You know, I worked in a restaurant in college. And then very shortly after that, I started working with a wine company, but I want to make wine. So I started making wine in my garage. Well, eventually I'd go back to college and study winemaking at UC Davis. And that would confirm a lot of the process. And I learned what I didn't know too, but It is all about patience, and wine is an interesting beverage, unlike most any other in the world. You only get to make it one time a year.
Right.
You know, the grapes get ripe in the middle of October. That's the day you make wine. If you're making beer, for instance, well, heck, you can make beer on Tuesday. And when the following Tuesday rolls around, if you don't have any beer left, you can make any more. Or you can make some more, And if you're if you have too much beer left, well, you can wait two more Tuesdays before you make it again. So
right.
You have to, with wine, say to yourself, okay, I think I need this much wine 2 years from now, because our wine's barrel aged for 2 years. So the day
right.
we pick the grape, we're focused. We go through that harvest. We go through each of those tanks, and we taste, and we do our winemaking, and we press at the precise time, and we put that in a barrel. And then we babysit that wine for 24 months.
Right.
So the process takes 2 years from the time we crush a grape until we have it in the bottle available for the consumer. So the first thing you have to do is wait 2 years after you waited a year for the grapes to grow. And then you have to understand, did I make the right amount? Did I make enough cases to sell in the coming selling season? And that's one of the tricks in the wine business, is managing that inventory, because you have no way of maybe knowing. I mean, 2 years ago, we didn't know there was going to be a COVID virus, but
right.
we had to make some decision on the 2017 vintage, right?
Right.
So that's what we're selling, yeah.
Yeah, the unknown is a big factor. Anything you do, you have to be prepared and be able to react properly, like you mentioned earlier. Definitely do.
Yeah.
So, is there a particular part of the winemaking process you say is most difficult, really?
Yeah, there's two things. One is knowing exactly when to pick the grapes, because that's what you get. You pick them too soon, and they could be. It could be angular and hard. You pick them too late, they could be extracted, and the flavors are determined by when you pick the grapes. So we spend an awful lot of time making our harvest decisions perfectly. Then fermentation can be a challenge. The whole point of fermentation is it was an early discovery by man, 7,000 years ago, but it wasn't very controlled. It was by accident that they found some fruit in a clay pot that they liked, and they all had fun afterwards when they drank it. Right? And so the fermentation process is very precise. It's a preservation process, and it only works for us, for the type of wines we're making, it only works when all of the sugar has been fermented out of the wine, and there's things that can go wrong during that, call it, three-week fermentation process that could prevent that from being successful. So making that harvest decision and then managing that fermentation are what we think two critical points that require that patience and detail in the process.
What do you like most about your position?
Well, I love winemaking, so I love to be able to make wine. I love working with the team at Yao Family Wines and working with Yao because he's such a great person to work with. And there's absolutely one of the most beautiful places on earth is the Napa Valley. I live here and I work here, and it's something I'm always thankful for, because it's very rewarding to be here, to be able to make these wines and then let people taste them and enjoy them.
Tom, you've been informative as usual. It's always great to talk to you. Thank you for joining me again on every panel. Give us an update on the company. You guys are moving in the right direction as always. You're growing. You submitted yourself as one of the best wineries in the world. Congratulations on that. And I'd love to talk to you again in the future for another update. Thank you for joining me.
John, you're friends of Yao Family Wines. I love chatting with you. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me. And I'm happy to come back anytime whenever you want to talk about something new.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Be safe.
Okay. Cheers. You too. Stay safe.
Cool.
Bye now.
Bye. Yes, that was a world-renowned winemaker, Tom Hine, once again joining the Innovate panel. Always great to talk to Tom, learn about the company. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next time.